It's July, school holidays are coming up, and the ski slopes are pretty brown. But the ski field operators are optimistic.
Seems like this incredibly confident industry, despite, you know, varying snow conditions.
Snowmaking could have us skiing here as well in the year 2090 as what we were in 1990.
You heard it, 2090. And they're on a spending spree.
There's a 2.7 kilometre gondola that we're proposing to open up the Doolans Basin, which will make it 711 hectares, the biggest in New Zealand.
After an autumn of record temperatures and warnings of a warmer world, how can this be? The answer is inside a shipping container.
This is our insurance policy, a snow factory.
Technology that can make snow in temperatures up to 20 degrees.
That's right, 20 degrees Celsius. I'm Sharon Brett-Kelly. Today on The Detail, why the ski industry is betting big on the future. We find out what's happening in the South Island, plus Ruapehu Ski Field's outlook after years of turmoil.
Yeah, I'd say there's a pretty low stoke factor at the moment in Wanaka and in my flat.
That's RNZ's Katie Todd in Wanaka, desperate for a decent dump of snow.
There's so many people just kind of milling around Wanaka, biding their time and waiting. Two of my flatmates are working on the mountain this season. They've had their training, they're ready to go, but they're basically just having to lean into the board games and everyone's really just holding out for a big dump of snow.
So for most ski fields, it's July the 4th, the opening.
Yes, it's kind of getting pushed out for all the ski fields. We're about 2 weeks past the opening date that they set earlier on in the season. But yeah, basically the only thing you can ski at the moment is beginner areas.
So is there enough? Is there enough snow for them to open?
Essentially, it's all man-made snow, which is propping them up at the moment. There's no real snow up on the higher fields where the intermediate or kind of gnarly terrain is. And if you look at the smaller club fields in Canterbury, they're all closed at the moment and they're just waiting for natural snow to fall.
Is this particularly late?
It's not completely unprecedented. You've probably heard that saying, you know, snow in May never stays, snow in June, it's still too soon, snow in July, you can rely. So people are really like reciting that around Wanaka at the moment and holding out hope. But it is an El Nino year as well. So that means that from the outset, ski operators were saying that it was basically going to be a really unpredictable year. And it also comes on top of last year being really bad for snow. Earth Sciences New Zealand told us that it was abysmal for snow in New Zealand last year. And some of the little club fields actually never got to open. And some of them opened for, you know, one weekend in total. So there's like this really great sense that we need some redemption down here.
And we shouldn't forget the club fields because there's a heck of a lot of them around the South Island.
Absolutely. It almost feels like it's becoming a bit of a two-speed industry because, you know, the big fields are buying so much snowmaking equipment at the moment. Cadrona's got 132 snow guns now, and they can kind of manufacture their way through the slow patches and the poor snow. The club fields really just have to kind of look to the sky and hope for that natural snow. And obviously when that doesn't deliver like last year, it really hurts their baselines.
So would their futures be in much more in question than the bigger ski fields, the big commercial ones?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say that's a fair thing to say. Because if you look at the big fields at the moment, they're doing mega upgrades. Cadrona just opened this massive new Soho Basin area last year, making it the largest ski field in New Zealand. Coronet's just opened this thing called a snow factory, so it can manufacture more snow even when the temperatures are in the positive. And both Cadrona and Treble Cone have just upgraded their base areas. Remarkables announced it's lodging this fast-track application to become New Zealand's largest ski area by expanding into this area called Doolans Basin. That would be a $150 million upgrade, and it involves New Zealand's longest gondola. So, yeah, it kind of seems like there's this massive gap between the big operators and the small clubs.
What about the, you know, the Middle East and the fuel crisis? How much is that playing into things?
I've talked to some ski hill operators about this, and they say they have seen a little bit of a softening of demand, but for them it's really hard to differentiate how much of that is coming from the situation in the Middle East and how much of that is coming from the poor snow. So it's kind of a double whammy, actually kind of a triple whammy, because those high fuel prices are also raising their operating costs and the costs for all the kind of supporting businesses as well. Of course, as I mentioned before, it is within the wider trend of Queenstown Lakes tourism absolutely booming. So even if it is a bump, it's still within an overall positive trend, hopefully, for now.
Paul Anderson is Chief Executive of NZ Ski, which owns Mount Hutt, the Remarkables and Coronet Peak. He says it's not so much the warm start to the season.
It's more about the variability in both the temperature, the precipitation and the wind, and those extremes getting stronger.
People who, I guess, don't know the industry well keep talking about it as a sunset industry because of climate change, because of the global warming. But it's not, because it can't be, because your companies like yours are investing so much money into these machines, as well as expansion.
Yeah, quite interesting. In our application for the expansion of the Remarkables, the Department of Conservation has asked some very valid questions about climate change. We went back, we've been operating up there for 40 years, and we went back and looked at the snowfall accumulations over that period, and it's actually trending up, which was probably not what we expected to see.
Really?
There was some work done about a decade ago, which predicted that while there would be some warming of a couple of degrees, that the precipitation wasn't going to dry up. So because we're well above the, you know, the snow line, we are still getting good snow. Having said that, it's that variability that I spoke about before, that's really important for us to manage. So because we know there'll be seasons like this season that you're late getting started, and there'll be some seasons where it warms up during the season and you need something to supplement, something to just keep you going through that period.
Tell me about the big plan for the Remarkables, because if and when it goes through, it will be the biggest ski field in New Zealand.
So NZ Ski, we've invested about $100 million up there in the last decade, modernising the ski area that Mount Cook originally put there in the 80s. And we've doubled the skier numbers up there in that same time. So that's given us the confidence to go to the next step, which is there's another valley just to the southeast of the existing ski area operations. The valley we're currently in is called the Rastaspern. The new valley is called the Doolans. There's a 2.7-kilometre gondola that we're proposing to open up the Doolans Basin. And that's another 262 hectares of terrain, which will make it 711 hectares, the biggest in New Zealand.
It's a fast-track project?
Yep.
And where is everything at the moment?
We submitted to the EPA on the 20th of May. And they do an initial process where they check the application for completeness, and they consult with the regulatory agencies who have an interest in it. So for us, that's the Department of Conservation, Central Otago District Council, Queenstown Lakes District Council, and Otago Regional Council. And there's a few others like Heritage New Zealand, most importantly iwi. So they're going through that process at the moment. The application we've put in is some 4,200 pages, so we've been extremely thorough.
If it all goes through, when would you start building?
Well, we'll get a decision by the beginning of next year. So it'll probably be the summer of 2028 that we would start some form of civil works. And it'd be a two-year build to get that gondola built, because it's kind of like building a small town on the side of a mountain. You know, we're going to end up having 6,000 people at one time up there. You know, I would like to hope we've got the gondola operating in 4 years.
You don't have any trouble convincing investors that this is a good thing to put their money into?
No, we're actually a family-owned business. It's a local family, the Davies. Their company is called Trojan Holdings, and we've got a few tourism holdings, the Hermitage, Milford and Rootburn, Guided Walks. We've got interest in Bungee, KJet. And they've got property development as well. They've always been really ambitious for Queenstown, and they understand the place that the ski areas play in the prosperity of Queenstown. So they're really keen to get underway.
So let's get into the snowmaking technology that is fueling this confidence in the future of ski fields, not just here, but around the world, including Australia.
Over recent decades, there's been a slow decline in the amount of natural snowfall every year. But because the resorts have gotten so much better at making snow and farming it and moving it around, the actual number of days that on average resorts are open for is much longer than it used to be.
Where are
you? I'm up on the mountain, which, you can get everything from wind to echo for sure. So it might just provide a bit of that mountain mystique in the way it comes through. Yeah.
That's Travis Donohue, Chief Executive of Whakapapa.
At Mount Ruapehu here, we actually have a really long season. So we don't actually plan our opening until early July. We do open back at King's Birthday with sightseeing and snow play, but we run all the way to Labour Weekend. So relatively long season. So we expect that we progressively open our lifts and terrain throughout July and sometimes even into early August.
I'm very fascinated by the snowmaking machines because I've looked around and it seems to me that the New Zealand ski fields are pouring a lot of money into snowmakers. Does that really secure your future?
Snowmaking's two things. It can add a really great base for the natural snow to fall on, so really additive. But when the natural snow hasn't fallen, it's actually a fantastic piece of insurance for us against that variability. So really essential, actually, for not only New Zealand ski areas, but globally. More and more resorts are looking to add that kind of surety, that ability to commit to an opening and know that you're going to be able to open. And that's the real value that snowmaking provides.
Right now, in the South Island and even on Ruapehu, you know, I've looked at the live cameras, it's pretty brown. So does that mean that the snowmaking factories or machines can provide you a base across the ski field?
Yeah, absolutely. So here at Whakapapa, we've got a just over 2 kilometre network of snow guns, which provides a great main trail from top to bottom. And so we do two things here. We've got conventional snow guns, which require a below freezing temperature and the correct humidity to be able to make snow. They work by effectively turning the water that they're fed into a really fine particle. And during the hang time that plus the fan air that pushes that out, that hang time is where that water becomes snow. And that's one way, relying on those below freezing and correct temperature humidities. But we also have a snow factory, which is into its 10th season here at Whakapapa now. And that's completely different, where that's a large containerized solution. It can generate just over 200 cubic meters of snow every 24 hours. And think of that one as a large shaved ice machine almost, in the way that it feeds water in, freezes it on a wall, cuts it all up, and then a fan blows it out a tube. Putting those kind of two technologies together provides that reliability. That snow factory can actually operate well into the plus temperatures and even towards summer temperatures.
I know. I've heard that they work up to 20 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, that's right. With that, we've been afforded the ability to actually expand our range of experiences. We've got something new here called Snowland this year. Adding to that snow play and sightseeing I mentioned, we've also got going with tubing. Tubing's more exhilarating in how you slide and spin on the snow. And we were able to open that back, as I said, on King's Birthday, because that snow factory can generate a reliable experience when we need it. So again, takes that Mother Nature mercy or the guessing out of being a ski area when you've got assets like this. The other thing with those conventional snow guns I mentioned is that they've come a really long way in their technology. Every kilowatt of energy that's needed is now 30% more efficient in what you get it back out as snow. And the extra gain is that they actually are automated. They've each got their own little weather sensor on them, and they can actually start themselves. So the further technology comes into it, the better.
Are you saying that the snowmaking technology now means that a ski field like yours can defy, really, the effects of climate change?
To a degree, truth be told, snowmaking does require a lot of energy input, as I was just referencing with the kilowatt factor. But we, you know, can also start to look at, you know, being a part of that watershed cycle as well. So snow on the ground up the mountain does eventually melt and become kind of water again. So it's very circular in that regard. The only unfortunate part is that we require the energy at the same time New Zealand needs its energy, which is winter. There's other extra stages too, like the grooming fleet, the snow cats that we have now have something called SnowSat on them. And that uses LiDAR-based mapping of the terrain so that a groomer can actually know exactly how much snow it is standing on. So your ability to actually harvest and move the snow and use it is just exponentially improving. And so when you put all of that together, I think it does certainly allow us to combat, as you say, the effects of that variability. We do still need those temperatures to sit right for the conventional snowmaking. With the snow that's starting to fall and the southerly starting to kick in this last week, it feels like it might just be turning on now, just in time.
So how costly, how much of an investment have you made in the snowmaking?
Just within the last couple of years, we've spent another couple of million dollars. Just to reference, the cost of a snow factory on site would be in the region of $2 million. And per snow gun, approximately 100,000 New Zealand.
The power cost, have you worked out how much more it costs to keep the snow factory and the guns working?
Yeah, I think that we do also have to acknowledge reservoirs, looking after them, making sure they can hold a lot of water. And then there's actually the pumps and the pipe network as well. And those all can add up to hundreds of thousands again. Here at Whakapapa, when all of our guns are on, if it was a great night for snowmaking, we would be using about a megawatt each hour.
A megawatt can power up to 1,000 homes in that same hour.
But when I talk about ROI and the payback of snowmaking, again, it's not just that physical infrastructure cost, it's also that electrical cost.
ROI is return on investment?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Is it pure water that the machines use?
Yes. So we do, in some cases, use a additive called Snowmax, which is a enzyme, which is fairly inert. And you can sort of see that it's actually a naturally occurring compound. That just helps the water get to that nucleation and kind of become ice or snow that much more efficiently.
So, you know, when the melt happens at the end of the season and that water flows back, it's not polluted by the snowmass?
No, there's been various studies that have been done on it and its use around the world in these applications that effectively show, or so far have shown, no trace or no concern as to what that does. And as I was saying, it is a kind of already naturally occurring enzyme. That's not to say I think that should be taken for granted, though, either. I think we're actually keen to continue to do more and more at-place tests and research on that.
The technology, you know, and the big investment and the machinery, that has obviously taken a lot of worry out of whether or not you're going to get people coming up to ski. But not completely. You're still reliant on the right natural weather conditions as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for us, as we continue to build a trust in the reliability of Whakapapa and that we should still be skiing here for many years to come, I like to say that, you know, snowmaking could have us skiing here as well in the year 2090 as what we were in 1990.
So Whakapapa and Tūroa on the south side of Mount Ruapehu are looking more secure after years of uncertainty.
The government has pumped in tens of millions of dollars to help save the ski fields, which both have new owners. But there's something going on off the slopes. Newsroom business reporter Andrew Bevan has been following the story.
There's still a lot unfolding there, for sure, and I suspect some people involved with those companies, there will be a sort of feeling of anxiety hanging over them. But there's probably a bigger story at play on the mountain in terms of a judicial review of the concessions that were given to these companies to allow them to operate on conservation land. And so that took place earlier this month. I think it was penciled in for a whole week at the Wellington High Court. We're yet to know the outcome of that, but it could potentially have quite wide-ranging implications for these fields.
So who took them to court?
So there were sort of two judicial reviews heard at the same time. One was from Ngāti Tuwharatoa, which is a taupō iwi, and one was from Pātakotoko, which is a hapū grouping from the Upper Whanganui River, driven by the Turoa family, which is obviously where the Turoa field gets its name from. They had the Crown in court challenging those operating concessions, basically on the basis that these groups believed that the concessions were granted illegally because they didn't adequately respect or consider treaty obligations in the process. Basically, they felt that consultation with mana whenua was a box-checking exercise rather than, you know, a legal obligation under the treaty and under the National Park Plan. And look, they basically want the Crown to reconsider the Whakapapa concession. The Turoa concession happened too long ago, and so it can't be can't really be captured by this. But any sort of amendments and future concessions which are needed for additional activities, additional infrastructure, if this judicial review is successful, will need to go through proper mana whenua consultation. And you know, they've been quite clear to me that they don't want to shut down skiing on the mountain. They just want to make sure that they are heard and properly consulted because, you know, the mountain is incredibly important to them.
So have they not been properly consulted?
I wouldn't say they haven't been consulted at all. I would say that the level of consultation that they feel they have gone through has been a box-checking exercise. You know, it's been perhaps a few casual conversations. They don't feel like they have been listened to or have had an adequate opportunity to be heard. And, you know, there are some sort of perhaps aggravating factors there in that you'd normally expect a cultural impact assessment report to be delivered alongside these kind of concessions. And the Department of Conservation allowed them to be passed without those reports. And sort of say, you know, you can do them down the line. 3 years down, we will need the report to be handed over. And I guess, you know, these local groups feel like that's kind of reverse engineering consultation, so they don't get to be heard.
What are the possible outcomes of that?
If the judicial review goes ahead in fulsomeness, the Whakapapa concession will likely need to be reconsidered. Any amendments to the Turoa concession will need to be reconsidered, and any future amendments or concessions in the national park will need to adequately consult mana whenua. And it is a little bit hazy as to what that means for the ski fields, but I don't believe it will see the ski fields closed down until a new concession is put in place. I expect it will be a sort of a rolling issue because a proper concession can take well over a year. The ones that we saw, you know, in the past few years were rushed through in a matter of months. So it sort of isn't surprising that they've not been as complete as some would like.
That's it for today. The Detail is a Newsroom production supported by RNZ and NZ On Air. Thanks to Andrew Bevan, Travis Donoghue, Katie Todd and Paul Anderson. This episode was produced by Gwen McClure and engineered by Mark Chesterman. I'm Sharon Brett Kelly. Ka kite.